Man, I've been good. I'm not re-recording it, though.
Oh, well. Too bad for the people who weren't here. You guys got it. Salem witch trials. Little girls. Lying. But claiming that they were feeling the possession of witches. And they were calling out. And who the heck were they calling out? The people that didn't fit or conform to the rules of the community. Anyone who was odd. Anyone who was different. Anyone who was not popular. That's who ended up getting called witches and were burned at the stake. It's all based on Calvinistic ideas that the government can force people how to act and what to feel. Because if the government allows sin in the community, that could impact the salvation of those who are going to be saved. Yes?
What makes Calvinism different from the way the Catholics were ruling Europe? Because
it made it different because there were variations wherever it went. In Catholicism, everything was top down. The Pope said, therefore everyone obeyed. This is not the Pope. This is just, actually he was a lawyer, ironically. He made a book, people took the book, and started making local laws. So it was, like I said, it was a democratized faith. It was bottom up. Now the irony is, wherever Calvinism spread, literally society would be changed in profound ways. The most profound way was the development of capitalism. People were told, you must live a lifestyle that conforms with Scripture. If you don't conform your lifestyle to Scripture, you could go to hell. What does Scripture tell you? To work hard, to be honest, to support and love thy neighbor. All of the rules. Well, people weren't doing it half-assedly. People were doing it to the extreme. They literally were doing all of their daily tasks, believing that God was in the room watching them. And I'll tell you, I don't care what your job is. If you believe that your salvation hinges upon how you are acting in the moment, you are going to do everything, 110%. Well, the funny thing is one of the consequences is if you do everything 110%, you're going to start to succeed, no matter what it is. Your life is going to get better. If you work, you're going to produce more, which means you have more to sell, which means you have more money. Calvinists also believe that people should read the Bible for themselves. So everywhere Calvinism spread, they took Erasmus's Bible and translated it into the language of the people. So, here you go. Here's the Bible. It's up to you to follow the Bible. Guess what you're going to do? You're going to learn how to read it because you don't want to go to hell. Not only did capitalism spread wherever Calvinism went, but literacy rates spiked. In the Catholic world, the people were dependent upon the priest to tell them what was in the Bible. But in Calvinism, it was up to you. And as a result, wherever Calvinism spread, intellectualism was revered. Because you started having more average, everyday men and women reading the Bible and actually understanding and thus becoming theologians. And they pushed for a better understanding of God's creation, which, as we're going to see, would spin off into the scientific revolution. And lastly, and I'm not exaggerating, it did spread globally. Scotland, their church would be known as the Presbyterians. It would go to England
And that would be the basis of Anglicanism. Also, when it came over here, Anglicanism, after the Revolution, would become known as Episcopalianism. The Puritans, who founded all of the Congregationalist churches, would be here in New England. In France, the Huguenots. In the Rhineland, in the Netherlands. Calvinism would actually play a revolutionary role. Because for a while, the Spanish controlled that part of the world. Well, people converted to Calvinism, and they proclaimed themselves being members of a different church. Thus, they demanded independence. Bohemia, Hungary, Poland, everywhere it went. Transformative. Questions? All right. Fourth and last version of Protestantism that I'm going to cover is Anglicanism. Anglicanism. Out of all of the Protestant movements, Anglicanism was the most unique. Luther, theologian. Zwingli, theologian. Calvin, lawyer. Anglicanism was not started by a commoner, a priest, a theologian, but rather it was started by a king. Henry VIII, the second ruler of the Tudor dynasty. Now, here is the funny thing. Henry was a devout Catholic. He was actually recognized by the Pope Leo X, who started the sale of indulgences, as being a defender of the faith. That's the highest award a pope could give somebody outside of the church. And Henry got it for writing pamphlets, basically ripping holes into Luther's 95 Theses. But at the end of the day, despite his faith, his values, his beliefs, Henry VIII actually had a higher priority. Dynasty. What is the thing that he put before his faith, his church, his love of the Bible?
Having an heir.
What type of heir?
Male heir.
Having a son. He started a church because he wanted a son. All right. As was the practice, princes and kings typically found themselves in arranged marriages with princesses. And Henry's wife was no different. His wife, Catherine, was the youngest daughter of King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella of Spain. So he literally married a Spanish princess. But, interestingly enough, Henry got married after he became king, and he only got married because all of his advisors were like, Your Majesty, you're now the king. You need to get a wife because you need to get on that production of heirs. So she was picked for him for two reasons. The obvious one, politics. Being the daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella gave Henry potential access to the Spanish throne through his heirs and the possibility of combining Spain and England into a greater empire. Spain, which, by the way, at this point had already sent Columbus over and was starting to enjoy the production of mercantile wealth that was coming across the Atlantic.
But the other reason was, is that Catherine was already known in England. Because she had already lived in England. Because her first marriage was arranged by Henry VII. She was originally married to Henry's older brother, Arthur, who was Henry VII's firstborn son and thus first heir. They got married when Arthur was 15 and she was 16. The arrangement happened when they were 2 and 3, respectively. But 6 months after they got married, Arthur died of a disease commonly referred to as the sweating sickness. So after the death of Arthur, Catherine went home. But all of the ministers basically said, when Henry was on the throne, hey, look, she was already here. The people seemed to like her. She was pretty. And again, she's a Spanish princess. And he said, okay. Even though Catherine was 7 years older than him when they got married, he was 19, she was 26. Now, there was an irony in their tale. Because many of their letters survive. And if you ever have opportunity to read their letters to one another, they did something that you did not see during this time period. They showed affection for one another. It appears that they actually loved each other. They had pet names for one another. They said cutesy little things like, oh, kisses, 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 huggy, huggy, huggies. Not literally, but figuratively. You never saw that during this, because all of the arranged marriages was like, the wife was like, all right, great, I don't want to be here, I hate you, I didn't pick you, my father did, but at least I'm the queen. So they tolerated one another. But these two seemed to like one another. And she was capable. Henry at one point would go to France to engage in battle, and she would actually act as sovereign. She actually took over the reign, or rather a region, and she would actually take control and command of England, and she did so in a capable manner. But age played an impact. Because after 17 years of marriage, the queen was spent at the age of 43. Now, I don't want to shock you ladies. I don't mean to say anything offensive. But you all have to face a biological fact. You have a clock that's ticking. And that clock, biologically speaking, impacts your ability to give birth. The more births you attempt to do, the more rapid the clock ticks. She had been pregnant multiple times. 15-10, pregnant. Stillbirth, girl, dies. 15-11, boy, successfully born, dies 3 months after birth. 15-13, pregnant again, boy, born, successfully, dies less than a month later. 15-14, pregnant again, another miscarriage, boy. 15-16, pregnant again, birth, girl lives. Daughter Mary. 1518, pregnant again. Girl dies less than a week later. She was 26 when she gets married. By 1518, she is now 34. She has been pregnant 6 times in that span and has only given birth to 1 successful child. That, well, let me just put it to this way. Think of the emotional, not only the physical toll, but think of the emotional toll. A mother gave birth to 6 children, and all of them but 1 died. Plus, she's now in her mid to late 30s. They try, but they do not succeed. Now, by the way, Henry, who was a, to say that he was lustful is an understatement. Even though he loved his wife, the moment all of this started happening, he became distant. And he started sleeping around. He commonly would dress as a commoner, sneak out of the castle, and we go down to the bars and hook up with women. He also preyed upon women of the court. And interestingly enough, while child with Catherine, after child dies, he actually knocks up one of his women on the side, gives birth to a son that lives, Henry Fitzroy. That was in 1519. So what's going on in the back of Henry's head when 1520, 21, 22, 23, 24 rolls around? Well, I'm young. I'm capable of seeding women. But I can't seed my wife. I can't make Henry, his son, can't make him heir. Because he's a bastard. He's born out of wedlock. He's illegitimate. The only legitimate child he has is a daughter. And can women in the Catholic world become sovereigns? No. So, by 1527, he starts freaking out. Because he knows his life is getting shorter. So, he suddenly decides he wants a separation. He wants an annulment. And by the way, this would be big news. This is one of the biggest news stories in England for the next 5 years. Everybody knew about it, which is amazing considering they didn't have the internet or TV. Henry wanted to separate from Catherine, but he did not want a divorce. He wanted an annulment. What's the difference? Does anybody know?
Just guessing. Annulment is like, you know, marriage didn't exist at all.
That's it. An annulment is a religious matter. A divorce is a civil matter. A divorce is when the husband and the wife separate, but there is an acknowledgement of the union, that it once existed. An annulment is the church comes in and essentially grants dispensation. It's as if it never existed. Which would allow both parties to then do what?
Remarry.
Now, by the way, for those of you who are Catholic, is divorce allowed in the Catholic Church? No. If you're a Catholic, when you get married, how long is it?
Forever,
until death do you part. So what Henry wants is for the church to give him an annulment. And by the way, the church did frequently give kings annulments. It has happened previously in the historical record. But this time, it was different. We don't have time to get into why it was different, but I'm going to give you his justification to the Pope. In 1527, the king would send a letter directly to the Pope at the time, Clement VII. And in it, he quotes Scripture. He contends that he is fearful for his soul, and he is afraid that he has been tainted by sin, and he needs the annulment to wipe away this sin. What sin?
Sleeping with your brother's wife.
Book of Leviticus. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy brother's wife. It is thy brother's nakedness. By sleeping with Catherine, it is the same as if he committed an act of homosexuality. He slept with his brother, because his brother's wife is his brother's wife, now and forever. Leviticus also says, if a man shall take his brother's wife, it is an unclean thing. They shall be childless. Does Henry have a legitimate child?
Yes.
But does Henry have an illegitimate heir?
No.
No, he does not. So he's saying, I'm never going to get a son. My dynasty is going to come to an end, all because I got married and slept with my dead brother's wife. We need to wipe it away so I can have a legitimate heir. Questions? I wish I could finish, but our time is up. Yes?
So where is the religion and all of this? What's out there?
The Book of Leviticus. That's a book of the Old Testament.
It's coming soon. It's the next
book. Oh, wait. What he's doing, where's the religion in it?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with religion.
Uh-oh.
He's doing what he wants.
The next voice, though, is limit.
Other questions? All right. I know it's Friday, and we don't really have any homework other than, you know, taking notes and, you know, going back and studying and put our mind mentally towards the third exam, which is at some point in the near future. But it's going to be a good weekend to work on your papers. We've missed the opportunity to get extra credit, but the countdown is on. 21 days until it's due.